Ding, ding.
It felt great. I knew. You know, once it happened, it was gonna be a thing. And so I tried not to look at the bench when I was coming back down, but then I kind of peeked over and I saw
Griffin on the move, flushes it down. There's the dunk. The wait is over.
How about we can just watch basketball?
How about we can just watch basketball?
Ding ding.
Good morning. Happy Monday morning. Welcome to the Daily Ding NBA Morning Show here on the Athletic Podcast Network. I am Jared Weiss. I am joined on Monday mornings by the one and only Mo DeKeel. What is up, Mo?
Oh, not a whole lot, man. My Trojans are moving on to the Elite Eight. Everything's good.
That's all that matters here. We're talking about NBA on this show. And, of course, we got Jade Hoy on the wheel.
We are? Wait, what?
If you want me to talk about how terrible Evan Mobley was, we can spend half an hour talking about how terrible
you
Evan Mobley was. Even though we did have that incredible
dunk
poster at the end there.
Yes, and how dare you.
No, I'm a Mobley fan, but whatever. We'll save that for the offseason when we're talking about draft. For now, we're going to talk about starting with the Denver Nuggets beating the Atlanta Hawks 126-102. Aaron Gordon is a Nugget, and the Nuggets look really damn good with Aaron Gordon on board.
Man, they looked fantastic. I mean, it wasn't the most stellar defense in the Atlanta Hawks, but, you know, Gordon showed everything that he brings to the table. He was cutting. I think his very first basket as a Nugget was off of a cut and a feed from Jokic for a dunk. I mean, you know, he cut. He was showing his ability to be kind of the secondary playmaker on actions. You know, his ability, you know, he shot the three ball, all right, went one for three from three. And, you know, the other thing that's most importantly was he showed what he can bring defensively. He was guarding Bogdan Bogdanovic. He was switching on to Gallinari and things like that. I mean, it was a thing where if you're a Nuggets fan, you got to feel really excited after having watched him play his first game as a Denver Nugget.
I'm telling you, the Nuggets got a steal in that deal for him. I mean,
they didn't have to give up much.
They gave up Gary Harris, who, you know, Gary Harris is a good on-ball defender as a two-guard at this point. Isn't really doing much for you besides that. RJ Hampton, a solid prospect that they don't really need. And then a future first-round pick, which, like, isn't that important for this team, honestly. So to get to all that, to get Gordon, who, you know, I spent last week doing all the reporting for The Athletic with Sam Amick and Shams Charania on the Gordon pursuit. I mean, I was reporting before the season started that Gordon was going to be in hot pursuit because this guy was just so poorly utilized in Orlando, mostly because he had to take on kind of a primary role, and he's not a primary guy, but he is someone who can thrive in a complementary role where he's mostly cutting and spacing. And we saw in this game, you know, like his first bucket was he just kind of curled around the top of the key, and I think Jokic found him and he just pulled up for an easy 18 footer. That was cash money. Second basket was he had a baseline cut off of a flex screen from Jamal Murray, wide open, really nice layup that he hit, Jokic jumping it off to him. We just saw that Gordon was getting these really impressive baskets, either cutting off of actions from Jokic to get it fed to him, or he was just kind of spacing the floor, catching and shooting when the ball came to him, or attacking and using his skills to be able to flow to the basket. Life was just so easy for him, which is why he ended up shooting 6 for 9 from the field and had 13 points in this game in only 20 minutes. It just looked effortless for him out there.
Yeah, no, it was easy. And I think the scarier thought for everybody is that, hey, the Nuggets are going to get better. This was just his first game with them. There's going to be an adjustment period. He's going to have to learn the sets and have a better better experience kind of developing that chemistry with Jokic. It's just going to get better in that sense. Now, the thing too about Gary Harris being gone, you know, it is going to leave a hole a little bit in their perimeter defense guarding smaller guards and things like that. You alluded to his ability to defend around the perimeter. That's going to be something that is going to be a bit concerning for Denver, but they're going to get so much, I think, from Gordon and from just using him properly. It's going to go a long way for this team. I mean, Jared, I said it on the Nerder She Wrote live pod that we did at the trade deadline. I think this is going to make the Nuggets the second best team in the West.
I'm on board with you. I didn't even know you said it, but I'm on board with it. And you did mention the interesting question of the defensive issue. Now, Gordon, when he was in Orlando, he did get the primary wing assignment most of the time on defense. We do know he can handle it. Obviously, the bigger question is, what about when you're going up against guards? It's the Western Conference. There's a lot of good guards out there. Jamal Murray's probably going to have to step up more. Will Barton is starting at the two. Maybe he still can pull it off defensively. PJ Dozier, I feel like, is going to get a lot of that responsibility. And I do think he's equipped well enough to handle it. The problem is you don't want to have PJ Dozier playing 35 minutes for you a night in the playoffs. So balancing that out is going to be a big challenge for Mike Malone. But honestly, if that's your biggest challenge, then you're probably going to be pretty good.
Yeah, good problems to have.
Jaden wanted to know if the recording set was fixed. Yes, it is fixed.
I'm seeing the text.
Yeah, I'm 99% sure the last time it was, I put on my recording system and then I just accidentally unselected the wrong microphone. So I'm pretty sure that's going to be it. So, and Jade, who's texting me, make sure I turn off my AC. I did. I turned off my AC. I turned off my fan. I made sure to turn off my dishwasher, too. So we're all good. All right. So news 3-2. So the trade deadline passed, but that doesn't mean that there wasn't more thrilling, really kind of big impact development in the transaction sphere. We had two major acquisitions for buyout centers. The first one is Andre Drummond goes to the Los Angeles Lakers. Looks like he's going to be their new starting center. I reported on that over on The Athletic that he actually was really on the fence up until Saturday evening on whether to go to the Celtics or the Lakers. And, you know, the entire time I was reporting on that, I assumed he was like clearly preferring to go to the Lakers, but everyone that I was talking to was telling me he's seriously considering the Celtics. They really are the favorites, or at least 50-50. The whole time I'm wondering, why would Andre Drummond want to go to this Celtics team that's struggling so much, who has a young center that's probably going to be starting, over the defending champion who is going to get LeBron and AD back, and you're probably going to be the starter? Whatever the consideration was, I think he made the right call, though.
Well, I mean, I think it's one of those things when you look at it, getting to play for a contender versus, you know, a team that's kind of struggling. And let's just be honest, it's going to be very hard for the Boston Celtics to get out of the East, even if he had signed there. You know, I think it was pretty easy decision. I think you're right. He made the right decision. Ultimately, I could see the hesitation maybe a little bit of coming to join the Lakers, because you know that, hey, at the end of games, and especially in the playoffs, if everybody's healthy, the Lakers are going to go with AD at the five. Like, I don't know if that means he's not, you know, I don't know if that entered in the equation for him mentally, but I think that's something to consider going forward for the team. For the Lakers, this is a great get because, one, they need bodies right now with LeBron and AD out and not seeming to be returning anytime soon. I think that was an important get for them.
Yeah, that was one of the major selling points that we had in the article that I have up on The Athletic with Jovan Buha. So be sure to go give that a read. Sign up at theathletic.com/ding. One of the big things that we were hearing in our reporting was that Drummond was excited about the opportunity that he's going to come to the Lakers now. And he's like kind of one of their most important players right now with LeBron. And LeBron is out for a while. AD, it looks like, is out for another 2 to 3 weeks at least. So Drummond's really going to be the focal point, really gets a chance to ingratiate himself with the Laker fan base right out the gate and find his rhythm, which I feel like is probably a better way to go about it from his perspective than having to come in and right away kind of figure out how does he fit in next to Marcus Gasol and Montrezl Harrell in that whole center rotation.
Yeah, and just think about it this way. I think, you know, if he goes to Boston, everybody's going to start immediately complaining if Robert Williams isn't getting as many minutes. And he's been great, you know, since Tice left. He's been awesome. So I think that might have played a little bit of I don't know if that played a role into it, but that definitely would have happened in Boston had he gone there.
So assuming LeBron and AD come back fully healthy, what do you think Drummond's role is going to look like with the Lakers?
You know, I think, you know, starting center, I think it's, you know, he's going to get a ton of minutes there. I think he's going to get some big minutes when AD goes to the bench, and you know the Lakers are going to be able to have him kind of almost be the focal point of the offense during that time. Maybe LeBron's on the court with them helping to feed the ball there and get things going there. But I just can't believe he's going to be playing crazy crunch time minutes in the playoffs with the Lakers. We saw what worked for them when their championship run, and it was, you know, LeBron, AD, and Markieff Morris in the front court, you know, kind of holding everything up and going small and adding that versatility. I can't imagine they're going to go away from that come playoff time.
Sure. I'm sure we're going to see Kuzma playing kind of a hybrid forward / big role a lot more now, since it doesn't seem like Markieff is playing as well as he was playing last year. Yeah, Drummond probably won't be out there to close games, but, you know, Drummond, the last few years, it's been pretty ugly. He's been playing on really mediocre teams, and he's taken it upon himself to see if he can become the most inefficient post scorer in NBA history, basically. So that's been the interesting part of this whole chase, is like, why is everybody tripping over themselves to get the guy that's been kind of like one of the least valuable players in the NBA? But we know that if Drummond is bought into a specific role and is focused on making the right plays, and he's getting the ball fed to him from great players that are the focal point of the defense, he's able to just rise up and throw it down, you know, hit nice floaters, stuff like that. I mean, he can be a real menace. So it's going to be really exciting to see whether he buys in and plays an efficient style and all of a sudden is giving the Lakers an incredible dimension that they haven't really had so far this year from a player of that caliber. But we got to talk about the other juggernaut over in the East, who the Nets signed Blake Griffin. And we're all thinking, oh, great. They're picking up a guy that's been washed. That's been, you know, looks like he's over the hill. Blake Griffin shows up. All of a sudden, he's dunking the ball again. All of a sudden, he's catching alley-oops. All of a sudden, he's looking pretty good. And now they get LaMarcus Aldridge on top of that. And this Nets team is so full of talent, so full of guys that can play in the big positions. When we thought that the center position was going to be a real scramble for them after they made the big trade and sent out Jared Allen.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I was surprised by it. I wasn't expecting LaMarcus Aldridge to sign there. I wasn't also expecting the Nets to be that eager to sign him. You know, my big concern, and maybe I'm overthinking this a bit, is, you know, this better not take away minutes from Nicholas Claxton, who has been great for them. And to be honest, he should be their closing center. You know, he has the ability to switch defensively, has done a great job switching on the guards. It's something that Blake can dunk all he wants. That's something he's not been able to do even in his prime years. It's something that LaMarcus Aldridge has struggled with. I think, you know, that's really going to be my big question. But it's an ultimate nice luxury to have if you're Brooklyn, and more importantly, you keep him away from Miami, who was really hoping they could get him.
And everybody thought they were going to get him, and that was kind of a shocker, right? But you're so right. Claxton has been their best center this year. He's playing better than DeAndre Jordan. He's been a real menace on the roll and the pick and roll stuff with Harden and Kyrie. I mean, he's been just phenomenal, you know, catching the ball, great catch radius, good hands, can really finish through contact as a creative finisher, and then has been a good pick and roll defender. And obviously, like you're saying, can switch and handle most of these matchups. He's been a real, really revelatory for them. But, you know, he is young. This is kind of his first real experience in the NBA, and getting some of these experienced guys definitely will be helpful, especially in the pressure moments. And LaMarcus Aldridge, I kind of have been thinking that he would make sense as really mostly a pick and pop big, who of course you can run some stuff for him out of the post. But I feel like Jeff Green has been pretty solid in that role for them so far this year. And you would probably want Jeff Green's defensive versatility more than you would want LaMarcus, who's more kind of a bigger plotting center. So, I mean, do you feel like Jeff Green probably still should be ahead of Aldridge when it comes to the pecking order for centers closing out games?
I think he should be ahead of Aldridge and even Blake. You know, I think I think Jeff Green has done a great job as well, and also done well defensively. So look, the good news for the Nets is you have several options to pick. The bad news for the Nets is you might have too many. you know, it's one of those things. And sometimes my just concern is like, they're going to play the guys with the name more than the guys that should be playing. And that's something that I think might be a problem. But ultimately, let's also just be realistic. they still have Kyrie and James Harden. And if KD comes back healthy, I think they'll be just fine.
That's an if, but presumably it will be happening at some point. I mean, this team doesn't need much help from KD right now, but they're obviously going to need him if they want to win the championship. But wow, do the richer get richer in Brooklyn? Then the richer get richer in LA. It's the buyout season is going how it usually does. It's the top big market teams getting their guys. But you know, at the end of the day, this Nets team, whoever they're playing for their bigs, they have, not only do they have variety, they have a level of precise variety that you very rarely ever see out there. And so those were the big names on the buyout market. I think one more name to look out for is Otto Porter, whether he gets bought out in Orlando after he got sent there in the Nick Vucevic trade. If he does become available, where do you see as an ideal landing spot for him?
You know, I have no feel for it, but I could just imagine the bidding war is going to get going pretty high for him. You know, just long wing guy, you know, not 100% sure how good of a defender he is or anything like that, but I think the teams are going to try to load up, and especially in the East, because you know you have to have, you know, long, lanky guys to go up against Kyrie, KD, and Harden. So,
yeah, you know, this isn't reporting intel, and, you know, Milwaukee has been rumored that they're looking at Brandon Knight. Maybe they sign up by the time this podcast comes out, but I figured they would be the guys that would be really looking at Porter, since they don't really have another 6'8 shooting 3-and-D style player on their roster, and they don't have Torrey Craig to use in that role. So I would expect that he would be a nice fit as a kind of depth behind DiVincenzo and obviously Middleton and Giannis. But whatever happens, I'm sure there's going to be more news. I'm sure we're going to have another one of these type of episodes soon as the buyout market continues to churn. Heading over to Charlotte, where the Suns won in overtime, 101-97. You know, the Suns were up by, I think it was 16 in the fourth quarter, and the Hornets just made a furious comeback with, we had Miles Bridges hitting a bunch of buckets with a couple putback dunks and alley-oop dunk. But it was Devontae Graham just going absolutely insane with the pull-up game. And it was kind of reminiscent of all of these Hornets comebacks in the fourth quarter that we talked about on the show together on Monday mornings, where it's always one of like Terry Rozier or Devontae Graham or Gordon Hayward, just like one of their guys just kind of going off and just hitting three after three after three, almost in isolation every single time. And then, you know, eventually Phoenix was able to run away with it. Booker had a few important plays in overtime. CP3, he did his CP3 thing at the end there. But it was Devontae Graham just kind of launching over and over and over again.
I don't know if there's a rule this year in the NBA that anytime Charlotte plays a game on Sunday, it's going to be incredibly tight, because that's just what it seems like. This is a team that doesn't go away. They don't quit. You know, the Devontae Graham was hitting some big, big threes. It was really impressive. And you saying they're running away with it in overtime, the Suns are incredibly lucky, because they were up to inbounding the ball with just a few seconds left, and they turned the ball over. I mean, Jay Crowder throws a pass to Dario Saric. I think it's PJ Washington who gets his hand on it to tip it and get a steal. And just as they're coming down court, Crowder comes in and not only saves the game, but saves himself from becoming the goat, the scapegoat, not the good goat. And, and ends up kind of poking the ball loose, and then CP gets the ball and gets fouled and all that. But this was just a crazy end of the game. And, you know, if you're the Suns, you got to look at some of the stuff you handled down the stretch and going like, you got to be better handling these situations. You know, Devontae Graham hits a step back three on Ayton, which, you know what, I'm not even mad at Ayton. That was just a tough shot from Graham. But on the next play down, he comes down off of a drag screen and pick and roll. And Ayton's got to know he's got to be up. They are up by three. He cannot give up a three with 30-something seconds left. And that's exactly what he gives up. And Graham ties the game there. And that's how they end up in overtime.
Credit to Ayton. At least he didn't let the guard get by him over and over and over again like that. Like it was happening kind of earlier in the year, as we were talking about on the show a lot.
But but that's okay in that scenario, right? You're up. You got to know the scenario, Jared. You're up three. Be up on that. The three ties the game. If Graham gets a layup, cool. You guys just got, Suns just got to make their free throws at that point. You know, I think that's kind of the situation, but giving up a three, now you're in trouble.
All right. Well, Devin Booker at 35 points. Honestly, that's not even interesting anymore. Devin Booker is just elite on a nightly basis, basically. This was a battle of the bridges. Mikhail and Miles. Miles was fantastic. He had 18 points and 12 boards, 8-for-13 shooting. Mikhail played some phenomenal defense. He had 6 steals in this one. He had a huge steal to go on a fast break and kind of give Phoenix control of this game. Hit a clutch shot in overtime that kind of set the stage for them to win it. It's been really fun watching the Bridges as both develop in very distinct ways.
Because it's Bridges, is it, yeah, plural? Do we call them the Bridge Eye?
I guess it is Bridges. Yeah, the bridge.
Okay. Well, we'll let the scholars figure that one out. No, Mikhail Bridges was great, and to be honest, he did a phenomenal job in overtime, basically stopping Graham and forcing him into a really tough three in that game. And I think, you know, just Bridges is just showing himself as, you know, almost a little bit more than a 3-and-D guy, although that's kind of like his floor, but he's nailing it. And then Miles Bridges, the dude could just jump out of the gym. Jared, did you see how far back he had to reach for that lob?
It was insane.
I mean, like, if I tried that with my shoulder right now just to see if I can have that mobility, man, I'd probably strain a muscle in my shoulder, dude. That was insane how far back he was able to go.
Our final game of the evening has the Blazers winning 112-117 over the Toronto Raptors. There's nothing better than when two teams work out a trade for fairly similar players in their roles, and then they play each other almost immediately. So we had Norm Powell and the Portland Trail Blazers facing off against Gary Trent Jr. and Rodney Hood and the Toronto Raptors. I thought both players actually had pretty nice games. Norm, he had 13 points, 3-for-6 from the field, but looked like he fit in pretty nicely alongside that guard combo there in Portland. In the meanwhile, Gary Trent Jr. had a really rough shooting night. He shot 2-for-10, but he did have 7 boards and looked really comfortable kind of grabbing boards, bringing the ball up the floor. Rodney Hood, though, coming off the bench, he had 13 points on 4-for-8 shooting.
Yeah, I was so focused on this being either a Gary Trent Jr. or Norman Powell revenge game, completely wasn't ready for the Rodney Hood revenge game.
Oh, yeah.
He came in and he was taking it to his former team. But look, Norman Powell is going to be a great fit for the Blazers. I know Blazers fans love Gary Trent Jr. It's somebody they kind of, it's one of those instances where it's like, we raised you, you know, and they're a little bit hurt that he was traded. But Powell's a little bit of a better shooter. I think he does a better job getting to the rim, is going to help them get out and transition a little bit more. And I think defensively, he does a better job of playing up defensively, whereas that's something I don't think Trent does all that well. And I think it's just kind of a great fit, and it's unlocked a lot of the other guys for the Blazers, who are also getting healthy at the right time, getting Yusuf Nurkic back this weekend and CJ Miles, you know, just last week. I feel like we're getting ready, Jared, for a Blazers run.
And they got CJ McCollum too, because CJ Miles has not played there in a long time.
Well, okay. But, well, I mean, it was really interesting. They had CJ Miles. No.
But, you know, McCollum really took over at the end of this game, even did a little bit of I think it did the salsa dance at the end there after hitting a shot. But he only had 23 points and 5 dimes, but it felt like he really dominated this game, maybe just because he got hot at the end.
Yeah. I mean, listen, having CJ out on the court now, it makes it a little bit easier for Dame in crunch time, you know, because now even if teams are going to continue to double Dame, which I probably think they're going to do, you have a guy in CJ who's just as much a killer as Dame is in crunch time. And I think that's going to be able to kind of help Portland get to that next level of where they need to go. I'm really excited to watch what this Blazer team does in this last run of the season.
Well, after Fred VanVleet made it 111-110 after hitting a pull-up three with 2 minutes left, McCollum got out there. He made some buckets, kind of took care of this one pretty easily. It is fun watching the Blazers when they have their two great point guards going at it. And it's fun doing this show when I got Mo DeKeel across from me. I got Jade Hoy on the Wheels of Steel behind me. That's just going to have to do it for today's show. So don't forget about all of the other shows here on the Athletic Podcast Network. We have No Dunks. We have the Athletic NBA show. We have House of Strauss. We have over a dozen team-specific shows from across the country. And of course, you got to subscribe to The Athletic. You got to read all of our coverage, all the breaking news coverage that I had over the past week, from Aaron Gordon to Andre Drummond to just the fact that I'm doing the thing here with Mo DeKeel. I'll have to write about that if you're willing to sign up. So go to theathletic.com/ding to sign up today and lock in a great rate. That's going to do it for us today. Mo, take us out of here.
Ding, ding.
All right. Well...